tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today, on the occasion of what's happening these days, a few things. We're preparing for Lupo Samedo's talk, visit, next week. And there's the building of the toilets happening. And also Israel's and Kelly's birthday. So yeah, the usual, you know, Saturday night kind of things happening, what to talk about. So different things have kind of appearing onto my mind. So what should I talk about? Something's helpful, something useful, something that's happening in the present moment. So I thought, yeah, just to prepare for Lumpur Samedo's visit, just to kind of give a talk. That's something that Lumpo talks about a lot, and it's something we can always practice. And that is present moment awareness, and how to add metta onto on top of that. And like I said, you know, Lumpo's famous phrase is, you know, present moment awareness is the gateway to the deathless. You know, we have, you know, all come to practice, come to ordain. We have ideas of, you know, to be free from suffering, reaching nirvana, and all this very kind of nice, beautiful states of mind, and this beautiful kind of dhammas. But, you know, it's important to not get carried away by ideals, by ideas, by fantasies, projection, what we think, how wonderful it is. But, you know, Lumpur is always pointing back to, you know, staying grounded in the present moment. Staying grounded. Where's the body? What am I doing? And that's why the present moment is always, you know, is the gateway. You can't get beyond that. You know, so it's the training, you know, for each and every one of us. You know, from the moment we wake up to the moment we lie down to rest, is, you know, to be aware, to be present. You know, of course, you know, we get deluded, we get distracted. The mind likes to go back, think about the past, what happened, who did what, who said what to whom, or what beautiful things the future might bring, what we want. When the toilet's going to be finally finished, it's going to be great. Because we don't have to worry about it anymore. We don't have to step around the construction zone. Or whatever, we find can use it with three extra toilets. Be great with big ceremonies. There's not a big long line of queues for those poor ladies who's going to wait for the toilets. Or whatever it is, so we can look into the future with anxieties, all the things that go wrong. You know, the leaky, it's going to leak. It's going to use up all the water. Where are we going to find the water? Or the sewage is not going to work properly. It's going to be flooded every time it rains. Or whatever, that we get caught up into the mind, you know, the stories that we, you know, say to ourselves. You know, one thing to cope with all that, it's always, you know, bring it back to the body, bring it back to the present. Where am I, really? And how am I relating to the present moment? Is it with kindness and acceptance, forgiveness, giving people and things and yourself the benefit of the doubt? And that's the idea of kind of, you know, adding a little metta to the present moment. Because sometimes the present moment can be a bit of suffering. That's why we escape. It could be an ache in the body. It could be a pain. It could be, you know, we're not feeling so well. We have low energy. Didn't get enough sleep. Bored, oh God, another day in the monastery. What am I going to do? So bored of this place. I should go to a new place. new beautiful monastery when everybody is just so perfect. Everybody says nice things. It's so quiet and so restrained. We practice so well. No such thing. Wherever you go, we have our own mind to relate to the thing. We have a fault-finding mind. Wherever you go, something's always wrong. Everything's good, but it's always something wrong. Or you have a kind of a mind that's tinged with desires. Then wherever you are, you can always add something more to it. You always say, there's always the next place is always a bit better. Well, I can make this better somehow. So it's adding. So a lot of time it's just to, you know, to bring, always bring her back. You know, where am I? And how am I relating to the present situation? Is it with understanding, acceptance? Or is it with fault-finding, judging, criticizing, wanting to improve things? And it's something that, like I said, it's very grounding. There's something more real. You know, the emotions is in the present moment. What happened in the past? It's always subject to doubt. It's not very clear. We remember the past according to our moods in the present moment, actually. And we also look to the future according to how we feel in the present moment. So it all stems from here. And really, time is an illusion. All we have is right here, right now. Everything else, you know, is just imagination or memory. You can't go back and change the past and make it any different. And certainly the future is yet to arrive. It's mostly fantasies and projections. Not sure. So one way to practice, one way to train our mind, and the only way, the only place you can train is in the present moment. And see what state of mind arising, and how are you relating to that? Is it with kindness? Is it with patience? And that's why, like I said, you know, the trainer was trying to, you know, kind of talk to somebody. The training, you know, in the Ajahn Chah tradition is kind of a holistic, multi-dimensional training that, you know, like I say, from the moment you wake up, get up early enough to get to the morning chanting, they're not very complicated, but yeah, you know, can we be bothered enough to get up on time? And then do we, you know, put our heart, put energy into the chanting, or just kind of waiting, grumbling away, just kind of living your life, drifting through it grudgingly, because you'd rather be somewhere else. And then, you know, once the chanting's finished, then the next thing is the breakfast, and then there's, you know, a bit more free time, and then there's a meal. You know, how are you, you know, relating to that? And there's, you know, there's enough things in the monastery to keep you aware, you know, time and place. 9:30, it's time to set up, or to go to the kitchen and help set up. So you have to kind of bring yourself out of your own kind of stories and fantasies that you do to yourself, and you have to get yourself down to the kitchen and help out. So it's kind of encouragement to pull ourselves out, you know, our own world, and that, you know, to be a helpful, a thoughtful member of the community. There are people who depend on us around here. You know, we're cooking, you put a lot of love and attention to it. You make sure you put the sugar when the sugar's needed, make sure you put the salt when the salt's needed. Little things like that. It's not, you know, rocket science. But it does lend stability. You know, where am I, what am I doing? Am I caught up in my head, or am I actually functioning here and now? And it's just, you know, that thing day in and day out, just, you know, stay in the present moment. Where am I? What should I be doing? And is my mind wholesome or unwholesome? If it's unwholesome, you're annoyed, irritated with something, then we find ways, use our own intelligence, your own skillful means to try to let that go. Try to steer the mind in a positive way. Because knowing, you know, a negative mind is suffering for ourselves, suffering in the present moment and certainly suffering in the future. And it's just going to be a, you know, very practical. And that's one thing I love about the Ajahn Chah tradition. And of the, you know, the encouragement of Lumpur Lim. It's always that the training is kind of a day-long thing. Monks, we have our 227 rules to be mindful of. Where are we? What situation? And as lay people in the community, you have the daily routine and the work schedule to help ground you day in and day out. And it's just a constant of, you know, changing. You know, the training of the mind is changing, making it better. Letting go of the negative mental states, a negative way of doing things, unskillful things that annoy, irritate, hurt other people, and being as helpful as you can. So it's just an attitude of helpfulness, an attitude of looking around, being helpful where you can, not making people wait. You're working together, you know, kind of washing after yourself after breakfast, little things, cleaning after yourself. When you go to the toilet, the next person doesn't have a mess to deal with. Making sure the water's there, toilet paper's there, just little things like that. But that's where the training is. That's in the details, you know. And that's where the Buddha said, you know, that's where the thoughtfulness, the maturity comes from. That's where develop the Dhamma is. Because we're not, you know, we're beginning to expand our vision instead of focusing inward on our own emotional state. What we want to do, what we're thinking about, looking around. Do you realize there are other people in this world? Yes, they are. Just not what you want to do, not what you think it should be. But there are many people with wants and desires, with feelings, they get hurt. They want recognition, respect, acknowledgement. And just kind of practicing with that. Being kind and gentle when you can. Because you understand that there's enough suffering, there's enough anxieties in the world. So we're trying not to add to the suffering of the world. You want to alleviate what you can. Also using wisdom, accepting that, yeah, from time to time, there'll be misunderstanding. There'll be friction, there'll be different points of views. We'll irritate each other from time to time. But you try not to intentionally irritate somebody else on purpose. You see somebody has a certain kind of pressure points, buttons, as we say them. In the lay world, sometimes you're in a bad mood, you push it and see what happens. But as monastic, as person who trains in this community, you're aware of other people's buttons. And you try as much as you can to steer away from that. In a way that, you know, makes people feel more comfortable, aware. And it all takes, you know, place because you're grounded. You understand what's happening in the present moment. Not carried away by thoughts and emotions. And as you go throughout the day, it's just the same. You know, just training yourself, either in the community, kind of work with a good attitude, with projects, communal stuff, after the meal, help clean up, instead of just letting the next person, somebody else do it. You just look around, see what needs to be done, the compost out, the shutters shut, things to put away properly. Not rocket science, not emptiness, not nibbana, not paticca-samuppada, all this lofty thinking that we can be carried away. But these are the things that will take you to the beautiful state. You can't not get to Nibbana, I guarantee you. You cannot clean the toilet properly. You cannot put away things in the kitchen. There's no such thing. Or you grumble your way through the day because that's a distraction. It's not the real practice. And now everything is practice. And it's how we relate to it, because remember, it's the same attitude that you do outside of meditation, you take into the meditation. So it's a mind that's so blurry, so clear, that I can't properly, you know, feel in the water, the bucket toilet when you leave, doesn't pay attention, there's no toilet paper left, the next person. And it's the same mind that you'll sit when you watch your breath. You won't be able to find the breath, you won't be able to connect with the body. So that's why the daily living, you know, the details are very important in the practice. It's not something that we can ignore or skip over. And it's the same mind. So when there is time to meditate in the afternoon, after duty's finished, then the mind is happy, content. You'll see that, you know, it settles down easily. Nothing's left kind of ringing behind, not carrying in the aversion, not carrying in the desires, carrying in the wishful thinking that is in the mind. As you walk throughout the day, do your duties, or just eating, you're in the present moment, you ground in the body, the physical sensation of the body, then when the duty is finished, you'll find that there's nothing to clear up, there's nothing to process. You're already in the present moment. You can be with the breath, whether it's rough or coarse, light or heavy, you can just be with it. This, you know, kind of a gentleness of embracing, of accepting, of just holding the breath, not wanting to be anything else, not looking for something else, not looking for your light or your nimitta, not looking for the visions, or not looking for the rapture that comes when the mind is peaceful. You're just happy just to be with the breath. And it stays there. And the meditation gets deeper and deeper, gradually. And then, you know, you're just standing back, looking at things, watching things, not making a self of it, not attaching to the beautiful mental states if they appear, wanting them to happen over and over again. But also, yeah, not being afraid of things disappearing, not being afraid of whatever you encounter in the meditation. But just being grounded, yeah, these things are arising. When the mind is peaceful, different things comes up. Sometimes you see visions, or whatever, but don't make a big deal out of it. Just visions, they come and they go. Sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. Doesn't matter. You meditate to be more peaceful. We practice to free ourselves from suffering. We practice for, you know, kind of peace and clarity, not to distract ourselves, not to entertain ourselves with different things. And it's, like I said, it's a very interesting path. It's always, you know, looking what's happening with the practice. Where are you during the day? Where are you in your practice? Where is the mind? And changing and using skillful means to, you know, bring up wholesome states, to make sure wholesome state arises, and to let go of the unwholesome states. It's a constant process of changing, adjusting. Like I said, well, we're fully enlightened, we have no desires, no aversion, then we won't need to do any training. But because we have these mental states in the mind from time to time, then there is always something we can change. It's always something we can do, can improve with our actions, with the mental states. Where it always starts, it always comes back, you know, to the body in the present moment. I mean, there's many ways, obviously, to pay attention to the present moment. And one of the ways I kind of encourage people, and also kind of, you know, from the teaching of the different force masters, you know, always the body is the key. And that's the thing that is more solid. We understand, and then a lot of times the emotional things, emotional states, it's always lodged into the body through subtle tensions, tightness, and just sometimes tuning into the body is something that's much easier for most people. And sometimes the breath or the mental state is harder. The feelings change very quickly, the mental states. But the body's always there. Something that, and then also I think a bit of connection with the body also helps a lot. There's so much in the world, we worked on computers, so much we're encouraged to do in our mind, to think, to analyze, to plan. So we're not very grounded in the body. So I guess this constant turning to the body, it's a way to stay grounded in the present moment. So with the practice, and as you, like I said, it's, you know, as you, the present moment is a launching pad for all wholesome dhammas. It's only through here. We're not aware of the present moment. We can't be aware of much anything else. And that's why meditation starts in the present moment. And then once you find the breath, it starts to become more still, more subtle, but always in the present moment, not anywhere else. But then one of the glue to help you stay in the present moment, stay with the breath, or just stay with the body, whatever, if it's your meditation object, it's a bit of kindness, a bit of gentleness, a bit of metta. Metta is the thing that holds. Because sometimes, you know, you sit here and we can all be very willful. We can think, you know, put your mind on the breath, put your mind on the body, meditate harder. You grit your teeth and you focus, but then the mind always shoots away. Why is it? Because it's not finding enjoyment in the meditation object. It's not finding enjoyment in the breath. But if you look at the breath, look at the present moment, with a bit of kindness, acceptance, just looking, accepting, embracing whatever's happening. Okay, a bit of pain in the knee, a bit of pain in the body, not feeling very awake, a bit, you'd rather be in bed when it's 4:30 in the morning, but that's okay. You're here anyway, you might as well just kind of sit, relax, and watch the breath. And you find after a while, the mind starts to brighten up, because you put a bit of gentleness, a bit of kindness into the present moment. And that, you know, the tired mind, sometimes you're working all day long, at 7 o'clock, like, oh, I don't want to be here, and shoveling sand all day long, or working on the toilet. And then 7 o'clock rolls around, you're feeling tired, and you'd rather be somewhere else. And you know, that's okay, I haven't been here anyway. You might as well pay attention to the body, you might as well make peace with whatever's happening. And then it's that softness, that gentleness, starts to build up the brightness, the energy in the mind. It starts to kind of imbue the present moment with a brightness and a clarity and a bit of energy. Because you're not wasting your energy by complaining, wasting the energy through more negativity. You're conserving the energy by just but adding gentleness and kindness. So that allows you to stay in the present moment. When you stay in the present moment, the energy naturally builds up and the mind becomes brighter. Yes, as the energy is more conserved, you can focus on the different meditation object more. And that after a while is kind of a self, kind of a positive feedback loop. As the mind's more bright, it becomes more happy. As it becomes more happy, it can stay onto the breath, or onto the body, or onto the meditation, the mantra, wherever you're using. And it stays there, you know, because more clear, more bright, more still. And it stays there effortlessly. You don't need to put, you know, strong effort to make the mind stay in the present moment. It happens naturally, because it's happy. When the mind is happy, it doesn't move. When you're unhappy, you know, right? It moves a lot. It moves into negativity, moves into craving, desiring something else to kind of replace the suffering that you have. And it's natural. But When mind is happy, it stays where it is. Then it starts to open up. It becomes more brighter, more peaceful. And then this wonderful state starts to happen on its own. Not because you wanted to, not because you crave for it, but it happens as a natural cause of stillness. And you see clearly, once the mind is still, bright, wisdom arises. We see clearly where it is that we're attaching to, making suffering for ourselves. We see clearly where is it we're making suffering for others through just lack of awareness, lack of thoughtfulness. But it's kind of, let's say, it's a subtle training, a constant, you know, as you move through the practice, through the day, through the years, it's just a constant changing, shifting, moderating, knowing when to kind of exert energy or when to be more peaceful and let go. So it's just a balance, you know. You don't want to constantly feel, and that's the thing, once you practice, you know, kind of, as you practice deepen, you get a better idea of what the practice is about. So you become more natural in what you do. You understand when to practice and when just to kind of to watch and to let go. That's why one wonderful thing was, you know, being around kind of very well-practiced monk. Just a sense of ease and naturalness, that they're like at peace in their own skin. They don't, not constantly kind of telling them, oh, you should be more mindful, or should be more restrained, should meditate more. All those are good in of themselves. But if we don't have the peace, the kindness, the naturalness to allow these things to happen, then we're constantly, you know, kind of berating ourselves, haranguing ourselves. Oh, you should meditate more. You only meditate 8 hours. You should meditate 10 hours. Or you should sleep less. Oh, you slept 6.5 hours. Oh, no, it's very lazy. You should be sleeping only 6 hours. Constantly kind of berating yourself on different things. So that's not also very useful. So there's always a balance between, yes, you want to aim towards Nibbana. You're hopefully walking towards that way. But it's a kind of a happiness, a gentleness, kind of a naturalness. It's just allowing kind of the wholesome states to arise by themselves and not pushing, managing, pulling too many levers as well. So that's why after a while as you practice, you get to understand that there's a mindfulness and there's a trying to be mindful. And there's a difference. But in the beginning, of course, you know, with anything, it's like, you know, when you learn how to ride a bike. A bit awkward, you overly tense, you grasp it too hard. And then, but you gotta do that to get it going. You're too loose, you'll fall off. So of course, so yeah, in the beginning, a bit of a tight, bit of tension, bit of unnaturalness to ride. But after a while, as you become more comfortable, you become more better at riding bike. You can be more natural. You can relax. You can even let your hand go without the steering wheel. And you can enjoy the ride. And that's, you know, and that's the fruits of the practice. For many years. And it's always been balanced in the beginning, you know. Obviously you have to hold on tight, you know. You have to hold on to the seal a bit. You have to hold on as a monk, you know, 227 rules. As a practitioner here, you have to hold on to, you know, the 8 rules. The 8 guidelines that you're asked to do in the monastery. And you have to hold on, you know, to certain things. Yeah, so it's not always about letting go of everything. There's, you know, hold on to wholesome states. Hold on to be kind and gentle. Hold on to the thoughtfulness. Hold on to the metta that's in the mind. But as you move towards, you know, Nibbana, you move towards the practice, the end of the practice, and there's just more of the letting go, the watching, allowing things come and go. Knowing, yeah, nothing's, you know, nothing's permanent, nothing is yours, you can't control it. And ultimately, nothing is worth holding on to. That's why the Lumpur Samedo is kind of one of the famous teaching he teaches all the time, is the sound of silence. And some people say that this could be a tinny thing, ringing that he's experiencing. But some people say, you know, it could be the ring of his bad hearing, or it could be the sound of heaven. Depending on your mood, I suppose. You're having a good day, it's the sound of heaven. The sight, can everybody hear it? It's kind of slight ringing. But it also reminds you, I think it's excusable for people, he does. It reminds you to stay in the present moment. And just if you focus on that, then you're less likely to get caught up into the dramas that happens in other parts of your life. You know, as he was, you know, kind of starting the monasteries in England, you know, getting the community together, monks and nuns, and lots of things happening, lots of dramas. They would come asking, "Lumpa, what should we do? This, you know, we have this kind of emergency, this and this and that, the other one. So-and-so's going crazy or whatever, or the walls are falling down. What should we do?" And you're just listening to the sound of silence. He smiles at you. Whatever. But it's a great, yeah, like I said, keep him grounded. Do not get caught away. Get caught up in the dramas of life. And each and every one of us have it. Even in monasteries, there are certain dramas that come up from time to time. Sometimes more than others. Where we can, you know, if you think you can, you know, and like I say, with anything, it's a skillful means. You can use the background noise, the background hum. You can hear it as a way to ground yourself. Or, like I said, what I always encourage people to do is just stay in the body. How is your body? What's the posture like? What's the feeling in your chest or stomach? Or shoulder? Not to, you know, fall fine or worried about it. But just to know, if there's a pain, what does that pain feel like? Is it a constant pain? You know, is it different from yesterday, today? Is it growing, slowly? Just kind of this kind of gentle investigation, gentle feeling. Not to veer out to complications. But just, you know, a feeling, a touching base, connecting with the body that we tend to drift off so much. And you can only do in the present moment. But just staying in the, you know, the body, staying in the present moment, helps you kind of keep things in perspective. Yes, there are, you know, urgent things from time to time. There are problems to solve, issues to deal with, interpersonal conflict from time to time, rats in the kitchen to deal with, or whatever, or leaky faucets, potential fires, or termites. Lots of things that come up from time to time. And you do the best you can to solve this issue. But you don't get caught away. You just, you know, yeah. So you stay in the body, working with different issues that come up, knowing that, yeah, nothing's eternal, nothing's permanent, and nothing is inherently good or bad. You can use each and every situation as a learning experience, learning curve. And hopefully, like I said, as a way to practice what different things that arises. And how am I relating to the situation? Is it through wisdom and compassion, through kindness and acceptance, or through irritation, judging, or fault-finding? Or through greed and wanting things to be different, wanting to be somewhere else? And yeah, as you move through the practice, it's always very interesting. There's always something new. That's why I said that's one of the beauty of practice, beauty of just staying in one place is you get to see your mind, you get to learn about it. And you find it's utterly fascinating how it changes all the time. And that's the kind of the irony of it. I just, you know, a lot of times just sitting here watching your breath, but it's so different. Every day is a new adventure. Every day, every breath is a new experience. And there's clarity and there's peace and there's brightness in the mind. Every situation is an opportunity to grow in Dhamma, to learn about yourself. But it all starts, like I said, all comes back to the body. It all comes back to the present moment. So, on this Saturday night, as we're getting ready, preparing for Lumpur Samenda's visit, I'm just going to offer some reflections offer some encouragement that Lumpo will probably say next week. But we'll find out. Wait for what Lumpo might say. You know, it's just kind of, And as we head towards the beautiful state of Nibbana, head towards the state of transcending suffering, it's going to remind people, encourage you, just, yes, it's fine to reach for the stars, but have your feet on the ground, really. So it starts from the present moment and starts with a bit of kindness and metta. So I leave that for your reflection tonight.
Sūpatipanno bhagavato sāvaka-saṅgho saṅghaṁ namāmi.